Yes, of course. Burl Bearer. I've known a few writers who were rogues and vagabonds. And I'm Roger Moore. I didn't supply the microphone.
Live from the gleaming, streamlined, state-of-the-art studios of OutlawRadioLive.com, nestled in our secret bunker somewhere in the Los Angeles area, the following program is produced by Magic Matt Allen on the Outlaw Radio Network. I am the legendary Burl Bear, the man right there, Howard Lapidus.
Yes, I am. When you talk about these being streamlined, state-of-the-art studios...
people buy that.
No, I know they do. So why don't you explain to them what...
This is the Lighten Up Lounge. It's a replica of an 1876 Virginia City-style bar built in Matt Allen's backyard. That pretty much settles that.
That's pretty streamlined. Thank you. And the guy over the corner would be...
The guy in the corner who we seldom let speak is Mark Boyer, our fact-checker.
Who has no facts for us today.
Oh. I have facts, but our guest...
Well, you have all the facts in the world, but they matter not.
Yes.
Correct.
Burl. Hi, I'm Burl. And Doug Bops. We got Doug. Doug, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I mean, Burl and Howard, I really appreciate it. Can you hear me all right?
Oh, yeah, you sound great. Yep. Sound like a real person.
It's good. But if he's on a speakerphone, you know, please.
Yeah, if you're on a speakerphone, get off the speakerphone. Just talk into your phone like a normal phone.
But, Doug, I'm really glad that you were somewhere near a phone about 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, we were hustling to get Doug. Because Leonard Bushell, our close personal friend and former drug smuggler, in fact, on our downloads of the show, his episode is one of our most popular ones.
Is that right?
Yeah, drug smuggler finds recovery at the movies.
Was I on that show?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah, probably.
He doesn't... Howard doesn't remember much. You two have a lot in common. Not that Howard's ever been to prison, but...
That's funny.
And Howard was executive producer of Celebrity Rehab, the popular television program, which I'm sure you're familiar with.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome. Home Alone, huh?
Yeah.
Yep, that too.
That too. Yeah, he's really something. Anyway, we're going to talk to you today about, I know you're under more pressure than an astronaut, but we want to get your story, and I'll give you a little background here. Leonard had me do some research on what is called the National Addiction Foundation, which is one of these things where, you know, the toll-free number, you see it on TV, you hear it on your radio spots. If you're suffering from addiction, call us, and we'll get you hooked up with the right kind of facility.
Right. That's right.
And there's two kinds of scams involved there, as you probably well know.
And the first one would be what, Burl?
Well, the first one is they're selling off those leads like any other sales organization to the highest bidder.
Right.
And the other one is where it's actually the rehab itself is saying, we'll line you up with the appropriate rehab.
Right. Which would be them.
Them, yeah.
Right.
So, Doug, tell us about your adventures in recovery. How did you get into this whole thing, and what have you seen?
About my story and, like, how I got sober and everything?
Yeah, a little bit of that and a little bit about, have you encountered this patient brokery stuff, too?
I mean, I personally haven't encountered the patient brokery. I mean, I know what goes on. I've read about it. And, I mean, I think it's horrible. And I think, you know, anytime put a dollar sign on somebody's recovery, I mean, it's never a good thing. And I think you just never know, like, you know, people's intentions sometimes when it comes to, because, I mean, people are now trying to make money in this, you know, opiate drug epidemic. I mean, everyone wants their fair share, and it's like, you just don't know who's real and who's not.
Their fair share. I found that to be an interesting concept. Their fair share.
Their fair share of the opioid crisis.
If you knew how many times I'm approached for us to be involved in patient brokering, it's really sad. Everybody thinks that, you know, for a buck we'll go do it. No, for a buck we won't.
Yeah. There's a thing about ethics. I know it's
something like that. Yeah,
it's the weirdest thing. Some people still have them.
I don't think it. I don't think they're getting their fair share, and obviously it's not right. But I think people, like, they want all. Everybody wants a piece of the pie. Even if they're doing it for the right reasons or for the wrong reasons, it's kind of hard to know who to trust, who not to trust. And you get all these people that are marketing. These treatment centers now have all these, like, people who just market, and they travel across the country, and they're, like, they're talking about their treatment center, and, you know, like, it's the only place. And I think that's where it really gets into a bad thing, because then you're, you know, advertising that your treatment center is the only thing, and you know, and it's because sometimes people are paid based on how many people are getting the beds, and you know, that's, it's not like selling cars, you know. It's not no. The same.
How about if you or a family member has a problem, get to a hospital as fast as you can, then they'll figure it out.
Yeah, how about that one?
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the, one of the things that I always ask in my research on rehab is, where's the doctor? Yeah. If this is a medical condition, where's the doctor?
You go find the doctor.
Find a doctor.
Yeah.
So tell us your story. As long as we got you here, might as well hear it.
So, you know, growing up, I was a knucklehead. I sold a lot of drugs as well, and I was, you know, heavily addicted to Oxycontin when I was 18, 19, 20 years old, and I found myself arrested on Cinco de Mayo of 2008 with a half a pound of pot, $2,000 in cash, and I thought my life was over. I mean, I was, you know, suicidal. I had just had no hope or anything. I mean, I was just a kid who had just, you know, barely got through high school, wasn't going to college. And when I got arrested, I got charged with the felony with the intent to distribute marijuana. And several months later, I went to court. The judge convicted me of the felony and was like, you know, Doug, I'm sentencing you to 5 years, but I'm suspending everything but 90 days. You can do 5 years probation, 200 hours community service, all kinds of drug classes and fines. But he's like, Doug, if you complete everything without messing up, I'll take the felony off your record. And at that point, like, I didn't think I was going to make it to C-25. I was 20 years old. I was hopeless, in the depths of despair. And I just see that, and I said, you know, all right, you know, and I got out. I left court, and I had to report to jail a few weeks later, and I got out and started using again. And I detoxed cold turkey when I reported to jail off Oxycontin for 3 weeks, and it was horrible. It was so terrible. And my cellmate was like, you're going to start working out with me. And I was like, there's no way I was just going to. I'd never formally exercised. It could have been a model for Pillsbury at the time, seriously. And, but I decided to give exercise a try. My cellmate was like a more jacked version of Brad Pitt from Fight Club. And I remember getting down to a push-up, couldn't do a push-up, could hardly do one for my knees. And with his motivation and encouragement, I was able to do like 10 push-ups and run a mile by the time I left jail. And I felt like this transformation inside of my head, like, clicked. It was like, you know what, I'm going to do this. I'm going to beat this addiction. And I kind of half believed it, I half didn't, but I knew that I was either going to go one way and I was going to end up alive, or I was going to end up the other way and end up dead, back in jail, or a combination of both. And I ended up getting out. He gave me a workout plan that I still have in my place today, so I never forget where I came from. I lost 50 pounds. And then I got certified as a trainer to help other people use fitness to change their lives. And I've been doing that for about 7 years. I haven't touched drugs since. And the felony ended up coming off my record in 2014 because I never missed a drug test, never failed a drug test, did all the stuff. It was a big moment for me. I mean, I remember going to court, and he was like, I never do this. Like, I never get to actually show what the judicial system can do in a positive way. And he took the felony conviction off my record. And then I wrote my first book back in 2014, called From Felony to Fitness to Free, to inspire people to make the most of their second chance, turn negative into a positive, and focus on how far they've come and not how far they have to go. And, you know, one of the things my cellmate always told me was, I was like, how am I ever going to repay you for helping me out? And he said, just keep paying it forward. Just keep helping people. And that's kind of what I've been trying to do. And now with my third book, it's, you know, workingly titled The Titans of Recovery, the infamous give their top tips and tricks on how they've gotten and stayed sober. So I'm interviewing 100 different people from all walks of life, you know, actors, musicians, you know, people, business people, you know, people who work in grocery stores, all walks of life on how they've gotten and stayed sober and whatever path works for them. Because I personally didn't get sober in AA. I respected tremendously, but it was never an option for me. I never went to any meetings or anything, but I know that, I practice a lot of the same principles that AA believes in. You know, I'm spiritually grounded. I hang out with good people. I practice, you know, getting rid of all my baggage and inventory and resentments. And I've made amends with my family, and I have a good fitness program. And I'm a man of service, too. So, but I wanted to showcase that people don't get sober in the same way, and they all sober whatever way works for them. So I wanted to showcase a bunch of different people. The goal is 100. I've got like 60 people I've interviewed so far. I got like another 30 committed, so I'm at like 90. So it's been hard because I'm not in the treatment industry. I'm not in the media business. They're tracking down some of these people. They're like, who are you? And I'm like, I own a fitness business. Like, I'm really passionate about helping people's recovery. But it's, I mean, I've been very blessed with how much success I've had. I mean, I've tracked down some pretty cool people and talked to some amazing people and heard some great stories. So
our fact checker, Mark Boyer, has a question for you. If you could get up to the microphone, go ahead, Mark.
What was your cellmate in for?
My cellmate Eric was in a bunch of different burglaries for he was stealing stuff out of people's homes to sell to get money for heroin.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah, he was in there for 10 years, not in the county jail, but he was in prison for 10 years and was on the county in the county jail I was in on a detainer. He was waiting to go to court for a violation of parole or probation that he had here in Maryland. So, but yeah, I mean, I'm very, very thankful. I'm very blessed that, you know, he was in my life.
Well, that was a nice synchronicity for you. If he hadn't been there, your life would have been a lot different.
Yeah, I mean, I dedicated my first book to him, and I always, like, you know, I just remember what I have the like I said, the workout routine saved in my family room, and it has words of wisdom on there, and I just, he always told me to just keep paying it forward, and that's kind of what I've been trying to do, is just pay it forward and help people, and that's kind of what I'm hoping this new book will do, and go from there.
What is the linkage, or what is the big benefit, or the brain change that comes with fitness in terms of recovery?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, anytime you can exhibit a positive dopamine response in the body, I mean, I think you could never go wrong. I think fitness does that. It releases the pleasure muscles whenever you feel so good, or the pleasure, excuse me, neurotransmitters, which you always feel good after you work out and doing things that are healthy to manage your stress and manage life's day-to-day activities. Because let's face it, like, the trauma or whatever, you know, problems we have going on in the world that we were sometimes masking with drugs, they don't go away. So we have to find healthy ways to manage it. So I think that fitness is crucial in giving the brain a positive way to manage stress and then thrive in recovery.
It's interesting. Years ago, I was at my chiropractor's, and he adjusted my neck, and it just felt fabulous. I said, I got a question for you. I asked chiropractor. I said, what is that? That feels so good. It's like this pleasure just rushes. There's three things, he says, that release these pleasure chemicals. One is sex. You know, if you have an orgasm, you get this pleasure release. The other is if you haven't had saturated fat for a long time, if you haven't had like a hamburger or something for like months or weeks, and you get one, same thing happens because there's pleasure sensors in your tongue for saturated fat. And he says, when I adjust your neck, I'm intentionally doing the same thing. I'm causing the release of these pleasure chemicals in your brain. So I had a great idea. I said, how about next time I'm having sex, you run in the room, shove a hamburger in my mouth, and adjust my neck?
You know, always the radio guy that wants way too much.
Yeah, that's it.
You can't settle for the hamburger.
Can't just settle for the hamburger.
Right.
Those of us who want pleasure, we want it, not in moderation.
How does that fit in today's show, your hamburger story?
Well, I think it fits in because it's like there was research done on cocaine, for example, in the advertising industry, that a small amount of cocaine, a small amount of this nervous system stimulant, stimulated creative thought and great ideas. So the typical American says, well, if a little bit, a tiny bit, a micro dose is good, a massive amount
must be great.
No.
That's not how it works.
No, diminishing returns. But I don't know if it's an American thing or a personality thing where, you know, nothing exceeds like excess. And
you're right.
what was it? What's his name? The guy who used to do the late night talk show. It's in recovery.
Craig Ferguson?
Yeah, Craig Ferguson. He said, "What would you like? You know, do you wish that you could drink like a normal person?" And he said, "No." No, if he was going to drink, he wanted to drink like an alcoholic. The thought of, not getting that excess was not appealing. I think a lot of people don't get that. But it does take a brain change. Now, I was fascinated about this thing where you're doing with the fitness aspect. of recovery. That there's been a lot of research that says you're absolutely correct. And yet there are very few rehabs that actually incorporate that, which I think is.
I know. Yeah, and it's like we're always the first. People always want to throw medicine, and they want to throw this. Which I mean, I'm not trying to debate that. I think there's obviously a place for medication, but why not start with some of the natural things you can do to nourish your body first? Because, you know, I think we try to just stick Band-Aids on things instead of actually like addressing the root of the problem. And, you know, I think fitness, nutrition, like, I mean, because think about like the way we eat too. You know, you can really balance your hormones in a good way if you eat right, because if you're, you know, you're throwing your blood sugar and your mood and everything else through loops, if you're eating a ton of sugar and if you're eating a bunch of stuff that's not really providing your body with proper energy, I mean, it's going to be a lot harder to manage stress and to have the energy to get through group therapy when you're in rehab, or to get through, you know, a lot of the stressful situations that happen when you're in early recovery. So let's face it. There's no better time. You want your energy, you want your sleep and your mood to be better than when you first stop using drugs, because when there's a whole chemical shift that's going on inside of your brain, and if you're filling it with crap, I mean, it's going to be a lot harder to manage.
And there's also other side effects of not eating right, such as having all your arteries clogged with saturated fat.
Oh, yeah, that too.
Yeah, I had my first exciting heart attack about 2005. I was so clogged with saturated fat, they were going to, like, you know, drain me out and use me, Sonic for their burgers, I guess. But and then another one I had just recently, due to the fact that my stents slid out. I think it's a class action suit down the horizon there. Got to check into that. But I've been in a couple exciting rehabs. One of them. The theory was that the underlying problem was sugar, and if you could deal with the whole sugar issue, that would make a big impact on recovery. I don't know how long that flew, but that was one of them, one of the things. But so what is, how does your program work? Let's say if I came in and said, hey, you know, I'm trying to get my life together, trying to get not drink or drug or whatever. What would you do with me?
Well, I mean, I do a lot of like personal coaching, where I have programs where I work really from the ground up. I work a lot on goal setting. We would go through like your health goals. We go through like who you're hanging out with. We go like a lot of self esteem things, as far as like setting goals and like your energy, how you feel about yourself, nutrition. Because I mean, as a health and fitness professional, I try to make sure that like I'm really incorporating like a multifaceted approach when it comes to your nutrition, when it comes to your meditation, when it comes to your working out, and making sure we have a good foundation for that. And I also try to work with other people too, because I'm not skilled as a clinician or a therapist or a psychiatrist, so I try to when it needs to refer out, because I'm not a replacement for rehabilitation. But I believe that fitness and nutrition can be in a huge pool in the belt for any, I mean, whether you're struggling with addiction or not, to be able to have a strong foundation.
Yeah, one of the things I say is you don't have to be a drug addict or an alcoholic to have problems related to drugs and alcohol. It's not an either-or thing. You know, you could be a heavy drinker and not an alcoholic. And as Bill W. said, the difference between a heavy drinker and an alcoholic is a heavy drinker can stop. You say, well, I'm fed up with this nonsense. I've had it. You know, I caught my limit. And, the person who wants to stop, but for some reason they have this compulsion to keep doing it, that's a whole other issue.
Yeah, I agree, 100%.
You know, I always, it's a little thing that used to cross my mind, think about, if you're an alcoholic or actually have a severe addiction, you will go to any lengths to get what you need. Now, it always seemed to me that if you took a real hardcore alcoholic or someone who really had a strong addiction and put them in a rehab, they would go to any lengths to get the hell out and get a drink. And yet I've seen some really heavy, heavy, heavy drinkers go into rehabs, and bam, they 3 days later,
they're cocaine addicts.
Yeah. Yeah, it was substitute one for the other.
Yeah. Although I mean, it's crazy, isn't it?
It is. Well, there's also that hierarchy
The people who are heavily into alcohol look down on the cocaine users, and the cocaine users look down on the.
So what is the hierarchy? How does it go?
It depends on who you are.
Okay.
You know, it depends. Whatever you're doing is one that's okay, and it's the other people who are screwed up. I figured that one out. So everyone's screwed up but me, Howard.
I'm not addicted. I can quit anytime I want.
Well, in that case, how about you want?
No, I don't.
People who do want, and I find it very, very interesting, that, like, say, in your program, but the fitness plays a big role, and nutrition plays a big role, in opening up the mind, it releases those chemicals, also makes your body feel better, and does cause somewhat of a transformation in league with other things that a person may need. But a person has to actually want some sort of transformation. Do they, or can they be transformed whether they want it or not? What's your feeling on that?
I definitely think you have to want it. I mean, I think obviously there's some times where you're forced into a situation where you're forced to want it. But I think it's like, you know, you got to want it for yourself first before you can really want to change. I mean, and we all have those points where we're like, that's it. No more. That's enough. And, you know, I think, you know, unfortunately, you know, you wish if you had a loved one that's struggling that you could want it for them. But, you know, you got to want to change. You got to want it bad enough. And you got to believe in yourself enough to know that, like, life's going to be better, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 months from now, 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now than it is today if you do the necessary things. I mean, if addiction really is a disease, I mean, we got to, I mean, people, you know, just they got to treat it like they have to do everything they know necessary to beat that disease, just like with cancer, just like with diabetes. Like, you got to do the right things, otherwise you're not gonna get well. I mean, it's just like a diabetic who doesn't take your blood sugar medicine. If they don't take your blood sugar medicine, then their diabetes is not going to get any better. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes total sense.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but unfortunately, there's people that, I mean, I think we just... Yeah, it's just there's a lot of situations where people just don't. Maybe they don't have the right opportunity, or maybe they just are told that they're not going to make it, or it's just stigmatized. There's obviously a variety of things, but you know, getting back to the original point, like you have to want to change, and you have to want to not only change, you have to want to get well. I mean, because once you just, because you're sober from drugs, doesn't mean you're healthy, and that's why I think some of my clients who have struggled with addiction really, really see the benefit of. With the exercises, they're not only now staying sober because they have these healthy tools to help them manage their stress, they're also a lot healthier. I mean, they're losing weight, they're at a healthy blood sugar level, their blood pressure's down, they're off medication. I mean, all this stuff is just at the root of the problem because, you know, we're going to manage stress in a healthy way or an unhealthy way. I mean, it's just the way it is. You got the guy who's stressed out for business, comes home and drinks a bottle of wine because he doesn't want to think about what tomorrow brings, or you got somebody who's struggling with, you know, being bullied at school or whatever, and they're coming back, and they're, you know, smoking this or snorting that, and so exercise can just play a huge role in combating, you know, these stressful and traumatic situations that we're unfortunately put in sometimes.
Sometimes even research showed that a brisk 10-minute walk has a significant impact on mood, whether it's depression, desire to use. And a friend of mine who's a fitness trainer here in Los Angeles on her blog put up and said, let me chase you around the block a few times and you'll see for the difference it makes. And so it was, and being she was rather good looking, some people said, well, how about if I just let you catch me?
Again with the getting caught, bro.
Oh, yeah, getting caught.
Yeah.
I mean, I cannot emphasize enough, like, working out, I mean, to people in recovery. I mean, I'm always like, you know, we over-prescribe and over-prescribe certain things, you know, before we even get to the root of the problem. And, like, exercise is one of the most underutilized antidepressants there are. And food is the most over-abused, you know, anti-anxiety thing. I mean, we get anxious, we eat. When you're stressed out, we eat. And we exercise. It's like, we know what makes us feel good. But you don't hear anybody say that, man, I feel like crap after I worked out, unless, of course, there's some, like, injury or something happens. But I think, like, also, like, we got to do what makes us feel good. And I think with exercise, with my business, fitness industry, you know, people are always like wanting to do what other people are doing and not focusing on what they like to do. And I think they got to get back to like doing things they enjoy. Otherwise, they're not going to do it, because you can't really be, you know, externally motivated if you're not internally motivated.
So what did you say? What did you say your tipping point was?
My tipping point when I was in jail, and I couldn't do a push up for my knees, and that was
right.
It. I was like, man, what have I done for myself? And I got out, and part of my motivation was nobody really believed in me, because you know, the rehab, I was like, screw rehab. I found fitness. I didn't like necessarily believe that was going to change. I just took it one day at a time, and I knew that I got 2, 3, 4, 5 months down the road. I was like, wow, like I don't have cravings. I don't have this. Like, I feel great about myself. And then it just became like a snowball effect. I started, you know, changing my friends. I changed my habits. And I guess the rest is kind of not history, but that's just kind of like, you know, what happened. I mean, I never was told to go to AA. I just was told, if you come back into my courtroom, you're going to be in a cell with Bubba. And I knew I wouldn't last long in a cell with Bubba, so I won't go back.
Yeah. It is rather an amazing thing. The research shows that one of the most effective ways of getting people to cut down and eventually eliminate something from their life is not to beat them over the head with it, but usually it's a friendly suggestion from someone they trust that says, instead of drinking 5 bottles of wine a day, maybe drop it down to 3, and the person will do it, as opposed to, you gotta stop! You know, sometimes incrementally like that, just, you know, non-threatening, non-spotlighting it, just, you know, start the process of the mind being open to make some changes.
Yeah, I mean, and I think we all respond to things differently. I know for me, like, that scared me enough in a way to get started and get on a straight and narrow. I mean, I know a lot of other people would have heard they wouldn't have responded that way. But it worked for me, and I'm not saying that it has to work for everybody else. So my cellmate, one of the things he told me that really stuck with me, especially to this day, is he said, I was like, you know, I was crying, I was bitching and moaning and blaming other people.
Oh, yeah, that's always fun.
He looked at me and he said, Doug, he's like, you can either be a man or you can be a wuss. I mean, he didn't say wuss, he said something a little harsher. But he said, you can be a wuss and sit there and cry in the corner and blame everybody for your problems. Like, that's easy. Like, everybody does that. Say, woe is me, or you can be a man. He's like, you got yourself in the situation. He's like, you decided to use drugs to get yourself into drugs to mask whatever pain and trauma. He's like, be a man and take responsibility and make the right choices to get your life back together. He's like, that's up to you. He's like, I'm not going to do it for you. Your parents aren't going to do it for you. And it stuck with me. And I just think about that. And every piece of adversity that I've hit in the last 10 years, my recovery, but, you know, you got to take responsibility. I think a lot of people have lost. They like to pass the buck on other people and like just blame somebody
right.
else. It's really
yeah.
easy. Well, when we all have our opportunities every day of how to respond to certain situations.
Well, as Burl Bear says, blame is only important to drunks and lawyers, often the same thing.
There you go. So you've brought good 90 people or close to 90 people through?
For the book?
Yeah. Well, into the program. So you do help people.
Oh, no. I was talking about as far as, no, I mean, I've worked with people in recovery training and fitness-wise.
Okay.
I said 90 people for my book, for the book I'm writing.
Oh, okay.
I
see.
100 different people, and I've booked 90. I've interviewed 60. Actually, one of my favorite interviews was with Bob Horace. He was awesome. I'm sure Howard, you know Bob, I'm sure, right?
Mm-hmm. Very well.
Yeah. So he was phenomenal. But you know, it's just been, I've just been really thankful to get to a bunch of different perspectives on addiction and recovery, and just be able to learn a lot. I mean, I worked at a center where I trained a bunch of patients for years, and I learned a lot about that side of things. But as far as like the stigma and the addiction side of things, and why people were doing this and that, I really didn't know too much about it until I started learning.
Times are tough all over. You know, I should say counseling, because I'm not a registered counselor, but I was chatting with someone the other day who just kept having these reoccurring crises, dramas. I said, you know, just like you throw a ball up into the air, it's always drawn by gravity to the center of the earth. And we are drawn to the center of self. Continually, no matter how far we try to rise above it, we're always going to be drawn by gravity to the center of self. and we keep doing the things that we have the synapses in our brain for doing over and over and over and over and over again, whether they work or not. And when times get tough, we tend to rely on doing the same things that never worked. And not, it's not a conscious thing like, I'm going to do what doesn't work, but I'm going to do what is the familiar path, you know.
Which is always, which for the most part, wrong.
Which just doesn't work.
Yeah.
You go, you know, why am I again in a situation where there's too much drama, there's too much stress, and with people that are all screwed up?
That's marriage.
Yeah. Well, you would know.
Well, I suppose.
Yeah, and that's, like, I think one of the things is, like, I always tell people to surround yourself to bring the best out in you. Surround yourself with people that are going to push you further into your goals, not close, you know what I mean? Be push you further towards, you know, where you're going in life, not closer to where you were. And, you know, I think one of the biggest, hardest things for me was getting rid of my friends that I hung out with for years, because we, you know, people say, well, I've known Johnny for 10 years or 15 years. And it's like, I had to learn to hang out with people who had common futures with me and not common past. And I still respect people. Like, I don't hate people. I don't not like people for that. But I just knew that if I wanted to stay right, stay sober, continue to help people, continue to help myself, I just couldn't be around that anymore. Mm.
Well, yeah. So, you got your guard up. You're not going to fall into those old traps again, are you?
No, no. No. And I've been very thankful to, like, meet people like Leonard. You know, I just through the book. I mean, this is all. I met Leonard just through writing this book, and I just didn't know a lot about the industry. I mean, I just didn't know, like, who was open about their recovery, who wasn't, and, you know, I just reached out to Leonard, and him and I kind of hit it off. And he's been very helpful with me so far.
Well, Leonard's great. In fact, he's the one who gave us your number.
Yeah.
Leonard Bushell, the Real Recovery Film Festival, is coming to Los Angeles in October.
As it always does.
As it always does.
Yes.
I remember the first one we did. The little tiny silent movie theater. And
yeah.
Ben Stiller was there. And so it was what's called Permanent Midnight.
Yeah, Jerry Stahl.
Yeah.
yeah, actually, there's a three or four short minute video about my story that's going to be shown at the film festival this year.
Hey, great. I look forward to that.
So you guys are in L.A., right?
Yep, in our secret bunker somewhere in the Los Angeles area.
Well, let's pin it down.
When I come out there next, I'd love to connect with you guys.
Oh, that'd be great.
Well, come and do the show in studio, as we say.
Yes, in our gleaming streamline.
Well, yeah, he'll get to see the streamline.
It looks like a bar. I hope that doesn't bother you.
No, whatever. I have no judgment here. I mean, it's been a pleasure to talk to you guys, and I sure respect you tremendously and what you've both done. And,
yeah. Well, we appreciate you, Tate. We know you're under heavy pressure. Yep. You have another commitment, and you've got to go do something brilliant. But we do appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to share your story and your observations.
We will have you back.
Yeah, thanks a lot. All right.
Burrow and Howard, I will connect with you guys on Facebook, and then we can connect when I'm in L.A. Thanks again for having me.
Oh, my pleasure.
Looking forward to seeing you. Thanks, Doug.
You're welcome.
Now, maybe we can get Magic Matt Allen to
do what exactly?
To give us a 60 sale. There, well, I can hear his voice, the disembodied voice.
To
of
do
Magic
what exactly?
Allen.
Yeah, that's
what exactly.
Yeah, what did you have in mind?
I had in mind him giving a 60-second or so break.
Why, are you going to catch your breath?
I'm going to catch my breath.
Why?
And get him out of the other room. I'll get some research material for you. All right.
Oh, okay. All right.
That's about all the time I have.
That's
well, we appreciate it because you're a major broadcaster.
Well,
hold on. Ladies and gentlemen, please stand by.
Here, you can.
I can.
We'll be right back.
You can go
after this.
Go to break with by talking up. Oh, come on.
You got Bitched by the Stones?
Oh, there you go.
That's a great song.
Yeah.
All right, here we go, Boom.
Go ahead, Howard. You take it.
It's not for me to.
I think we're gonna take a little break at Outlaw Radio.
True Crime Uncensored, Outlaw Radio.
Magic Matt Allen produces a
single. Yes, he does. And he does it well.
He's a star!
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da, stepping on the lyrics. I'm
Now you can take your smoking, drinking, interrupting obsession with you 24 hours a day on any phone or device. And it's all free. Just go to your friendly app store and search for Outlaw Radio. Then look for the red letters on the sign with the bullet holes in it and download it. It's free. Listen free on the road, in your car, at the beach, or in your backyard. It's all free from Outlaw Radio.
This is Buddy Twist saying goodnight from Hollywood.
Broadcasting from an 1876 Virginia City, Nevada style bar in the hills of Encino in my backyard, nary 5 feet from my bedroom, 10 feet from the bathroom.
Back to True Crime Uncensored with Burl Bear and Howard Lapidus.
We are. I've heard of them.
That too. Mark C.G. Boyer is now awake, which is good.
Yeah, it's good. Boy, I was worried.
He's back.
I bet maybe OD'd.
No.
No.
Now,
featuring Mark C.G. Boyer.
As you know, I am an investigative true crime journalist.
Yes, we know that.
And I was asked to do an investigation.
Okay, by...
By Writers in Treatment, publishers of the Addiction Recovery e-bulletin.
Okay. And they asked you to research what?
The National Addiction Foundation.
They want you to research the National Addiction Foundation for good or for bad?
Yes, exactly.
For both?
For both.
Okay, so what'd you find out?
Okay, you ready?
Yep.
Here's my report. Thousands of dedicated professionals from diverse disciplines devote their lives and careers to the treatment and prevention of addiction. And they do so with sincerity and the highest standards of professional ethics. The recent highly publicized scandals involving unethical and or illegal practices are neither common nor acceptable to most addiction service providers. These scandals impact the entire recovery community by undermining confidence in and respect for addiction treatment providers and mental health professionals. One recent revelation of wrongdoing involves patient brokering or body brokering.
Uh-huh.
A widespread method of patient brokering uses online websites with toll-free numbers that ring call centers offering to help the suffering person get into appropriate treatment. There are two similar yet distinct techniques used by online patient brokers, as explained by addiction expert and ethics advocate Paul Hochmeier. First, an independent person or organization creates a generic treatment help website that directs people to a generic toll-free treatment helpline. These phones are typically manned by young people, often only several months in recovery, with no clinical experience. The caller, usually the person seeking help or a family member, is asked generic questions and then told they're being assessed or evaluated by the specialist. Eventually, a referral suggestion is made to a specific treatment center. In truth, what's really happening, explains the doctor, is that the person seeking treatment is a sales lead, and that lead is sold to the highest bidder. Numerous treatment centers are paying for these leads, never mind that the caller has not actually been evaluated or assessed for their necessary clinical needs, and never mind that the treatment center purchasing the leads are admitting patients that often are clinically inappropriate for their center. It's simply a tactic to put heads in beds. The second situation involves a similarly generic website and toll-free helpline, but this time the website and phone number are not owned by an independent party selling leads, but rather owned by specific treatment centers in collusion, filtering patients to their own doors. This brings us to the National Addiction Foundation. Self-described as dedicated to helping people with issues of mental health and or medical condition of addiction, connect with appropriate and affordable treatment options. The NAF has more red flags than the NFL. We did have a name change, confirmed Wendy Hart, Secretary of the National Addiction Foundation. We were first called the National Assessment Foundation, but the new name more accurately reflects our primary concern and the scope of our services. I'm happy to say that we have received our official status as a registered not-for-profit corporation in the state of California. As of January 22, 2016, the Office of the State Attorney General database of registered nonprofits has no entry for the National Addiction Foundation. It is possible, of course, that the online database has simply not been updated. The foundation's website has a button to push to make donations. Two donations to the foundation were made as part of my research, but No receipt noting the tax-deductible nature of the donation was provided. The National Assessment Foundation is registered in California as a small business under the designation of a club with 3 to 5 members. The president of the National Assessment Foundation / National Addiction Foundation is Aaron Hart Brower, who, according to public records, is also the primary contact person at Recovery Bridges LLC and Laguna Detox in Costa Mesa. This raises potential issues of perceived conflict of interest and brings us back again to our concern over accurate assessment being an evaluation of your insurance, not your medical condition. The foundation maintains high visibility via social media such as Facebook and Twitter. The foundation's official website has not been updated since spring 2017, when it was already claiming nonprofit status. The website provides 2 phone numbers for free consultation. The number linked to receiving accurate assessment took me directly to the main switchboard of the Southern California Treatment Center. The foundation's website kindly assured me that everyone at the National Addiction Foundation is in recovery from issues of mental illness and or addiction. The rehab industry is the only business that touts having mental illness and or addictive disease as positive, reassuring qualifications. The website doesn't say, quote, mentally ill drug addicts are standing by to take your call, but the About Us section has no information about the people behind the foundation other than that they have all faced the conditions of mental illness and or addiction. Do we also want eye doctors with vision problems, oncologists with cancer, or cardiologists with heart disease? The upbeat and dedicated young woman answering the toll-free number for accurate assessment in November 2017 was exactly as Dr. Hochmeyer described. She'd recently completed drug treatment, had no clinical training whatsoever, and was honestly eager to share recovery. Question, when doing the free accurate assessment, I asked, do you use the ASAM criteria? Well, what's that? Well, it's the standard of accurate assessment protocols, the ASAM criteria is guidelines that give clinicians and care managers a way to standardize treatment planning and determine where patients are placed in treatment, as well as how to provide continuing integrated care and ongoing service. I just lost my place here. With the ASAM computer-guided interview, the interviewer may be conducted by any properly trained team member. Are you one of those properly trained team members? No. We just asked the client what the problem is and what kind of insurance they have. Oh. Wendy Hart, secretary of the National Addiction Foundation, was friendly and cooperative in answering our questions. She said, we do use the ASAM criteria in a modified form. Many of the questions are the same. As the people we have answering the phone are not clinically trained, we didn't want to burden them with too much. But yes, it's important to know what exactly the situation is, and we do take great care to make sure we suggest appropriate treatment. Well, why does the National Addiction Foundation phone number for accurate assessment ring the general switchboard of the Southern California Treatment Center? Well, everyone at the National Addiction Foundation has a vested interest in the recovery industry in one way or another. We're all recovery professionals working together in the best interest of those who call us. But we do not automatically send people to the treatment centers where we work. Oh, no, we're far more personalized and thorough than that. We give the client a list of at least 3 treatment centers that meet their needs. Do treatment centers pay you a referral fee, or do they bid on your clients? Absolutely not. We do receive donations from treatment centers, but there's no quid pro quo. Treatment centers donate to us because they like what we're doing. Well, do the treatment centers you recommend have doctors on staff to treat the medical aspects of addiction? Well, all rehab should have a medical doctor who knows about addiction or one they can call in case you have to take someone to the hospital. Simply having a nurse, especially one who has no training in dealing with addiction, is not sufficient. Conclusion. At this time, I am regretfully withholding endorsement of the National Addiction Foundation because of 2 significant issues described by Hochmeyer in the Underbelly of Addiction Treatment, a look at the unethical and illegal practices of saving lives, published in March 2017 by the Maryland Addiction Recovery Center. The misleading use of the term accurate assessment implies medical psychological assessment when it's an evaluation of your insurance coverage. The direct connection between the foundation and specific treatment centers in which the members of the board of directors may have a financial interest and or employment, both issues will hopefully be corrected or significantly modified in the near future. If you or a family member has concerns regarding issues of mental health or questions regarding drug dependence and or addiction, contact a board-certified medical professional with a specialization in addiction. And then it mentions that my opinions are my own.
Well, yes, they are. I almost have to recuse myself because I do know a lot of the people that you just mentioned and most of those situations and how they work. And you got to be careful not to get...
Yes.
You can be on one side of it, and almost was, but you know, you get to a point where you go, well, what are you really doing here? And you get the answers. And they're not necessarily the ones you're looking for. But like we said earlier, if you've got a problem...
Call a doctor.
Go to the hospital. Seriously, an emergency room. You know, anything like that, and it'll be handled from there. You don't necessarily have to call a number in the back of LA Weekly, and I shouldn't say LA Weekly because they have nothing to do with this. But in the back of anything,
in the back of your comic book.
Yeah, I apologize to LA Weekly because they don't do stuff like that. But the people that you do that you mentioned, I know, do very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
Have they been through addiction, as far as I know? Yeah.
Yeah.
And did they figure out a way to stay sober? Yeah, money.
That's very sobering, right?
Yeah, I suppose. And I'm not saying they're bad people. They're not. They're not at all. But their intent, albeit somewhat negative in your research there, their intent, I don't think, is.
Yeah, I agree with you.
I think their intent is quite positive. To get people off the street and into some sort of a program somehow.
I think where the problem comes in is when you go, gee, we can really help people and...
And make money and anything you're doing. I don't care whether it's this or, you know, playing records for a living. It's and how much money do we make?
Yeah.
And... then they figured out a way to make money. The price of treatment, not to scare anybody away, because insurance will cover most of it, but the price of treatment is anywhere between $30,000 and $40,000 a month.
And there are some that are like Beit Shuva for $4,000 or less, or they'll take it for free.
Yes, you find the Beit Shuvas of the world. And that's what's necessary, and you're not stuck in a
deathbed detox.
Well, overlooking the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah.
Some of them are quite nice.
Very nice.
It's not necessarily about rehab. It's about money.
I like money.
Money's good.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with money.
Money's good.
Money's good.
But.
Although it's hard, as Burl Bear says, it's hard to travel light with a safe chained around your neck.
Yeah, all right. Is that you that said that?
I said that.
When?
Just now.
Okay.
I'm good for something.
So let's back up. The thing that you read, you wrote.
Yeah.
And you were commissioned to do this research?
Yeah, I wasn't paid. I did this as a public service.
To?
This is for... the Addiction Recovery E-Bulletin.
Okay.
Because I think it's important, and we think it's important, for people to have information on what's going on out there. And we have had some real issues with patient brokering here in California and in other places as well. And it's problematic. It comes down to, I think if you're dealing with a medical thing, is first question is, where's the doctor?
Addiction is a disease.
Yeah, I tend to use the term medical condition because says, well, it's not a disease like cancer. Well, no, it's more of a disease like asthma or heart disease.
Well, the asthma and heart disease are not like cancer. You know,
no, either. Yeah.
I find people that go, well, you know, if my aunt could just cure her cancer by stopping, Well, no, you're not understanding what addiction is.
Yeah.
You don't understand. And people think addiction is something, well, you just go out on a bender and you get drunk every day, or you're smoking dope or shooting up. That's addiction, and you can just stop doing that.
Yeah, but that's not addiction. In fact, what is it, if I can remember the numbers correctly, and with heroin, you have about a 40-some percent chance of, if you use it, of getting addicted to it by doing like 7-time users, you know. But there are weekend warriors.
Right.
There are people who do it and stop. In fact, most people in the world who have...
Chase Elaine.
Huh?
Oh, you got that right.
Yeah. I just talked to her last night.
Oh, yeah, of course you did.
Now, here's a perfect example. Someone right. whose name we mentioned recently. Supposed to go into detox. Now, this is what I don't understand about some facilities. Good detox, good place, very well known. Supposed to go in at 10 o'clock in the morning. Didn't make it there till 4 in the afternoon and was turned away. Now, it seemed to me...
Was it Thursday?
Was the third?
Yeah, no.
Was that you?
No.
But things to well, what do you expect? You know, you're going to turn the person away and not take them to detox because they got there late.
So what is the story there?
This is what I don't understand. Another person I know was in a rehab, and they, you know, they give medications to some people. This person swiped some of the medication and was handing it out to other patients, and they wanted to kick the person out. They said, "Well, what do you expect? I'm here because I'm a drug addict, and drug addicts behave in certain ways, and I'm here because I want to change, but I have these compulsions to do things that I shouldn't do. That's why I'm here."
Yeah, let's cross the barrier first.
Yeah.
Which has to get done. If they're in the door,
yeah,
then it's time to get treated.
Yeah.
If you're not, if you're just at the beginning of treatment, you're going to act the same way
yeah.
as you were yesterday.
Yeah, so to expect the person to be, you know, cured or helped or have made advancements because they've been inside your doors for 12 hours or 24 hours is absurd.
Yes.
And if you're working off a punitive model, it's not, you know, we're going to punish you for not being well by kicking you out of treatment because you're not well yet. It's one of the only treatment things, illnesses, where in order to get treatment, you have to not need it yet.
Well, sort of, almost, depending on where you're
depending
at.
Where you're at.
Yes.
It's problematic. It's like being addicted to radio. It's as many times as it's bitten me, I keep going back to play the hits. When will I learn?
You won't.
I won't.
No.
Well, no. Once you got the radio bug, once you've played the hits.
They never go away.
No.
As bad as you may be.
Yes, and as bad as the PD may be, as often.
Well, there's that.
I was only a PD once. That was enough.
I was a couple times, and I wrote a damn good memo.
Yeah.
That was my claim to fame. And not that I programmed well, but I wrote a memo.
What was the memo?
And the memos would always be, you know, to follow the format that I put in there. Albeit the format was really lame.
Yeah. I created a lame format. Yeah. By God, you're going to follow it.
You're going to follow it, damn it.
When I first went to work at KOL in Seattle, they had a format wheel. And at 28 minutes and 30 seconds after the hour, this little pie slices says, "Element of humor."
Element of humor.
Element of humor.
Who was the genius that put that in?
Oh, God, I don't know.
But element of humor, is that the only place it would go?
That was it. But as Pat O'Day, great five-time winner of the Program Director of the Year Award, once said, "Burl, you wandered outside the format corral."
I used to call the hotline for no damn good reason.
Just to scare the hell out of
you. Yeah. That, by the way, sign of a bad program director.
Yes. Right, yeah. Calling a guy in the middle of the shift.
You and Steve Kingston should get a room, Howard.
Yeah. No, I stopped doing that when I learned that was wrong.
Well, you had to learn that?
Oh, yeah.
You didn't learn that from being called yourself?
First of all, I wasn't trained to be a program director.
Hey, Burl.
In the beginning.
It's called being power hungry.
Yes. Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah, I was power hungry. I was 23.
That doesn't matter. I was 23 doing afternoons at KRBE in Houston, Texas.
There you go.
Right. Yeah. And I wasn't power hungry. I was just there to grab some ratings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get all you can. Yeah.
Should be innate, though. You know, it should be innate not to F with the talent.
Yeah.
Hard.
Well, no, that was... Oh, I know. I learned that right away.
The great thing about Pat O'Day and Dick Curtis, two great program directors. And actually, I was offered a job.
It's a guy I never knew. I never knew Dick Curtis.
Great guy. Great guy.
Talented guy?
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Second time today we're talking about Dick Curtis.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I told you Dick Curtis story. Great Dick Curtis story.
Yeah.
He gets a phone call, Matt. This guy says, "I've got pictures of you having sex with so-and-so at the Hot Springs Motel. Yeah. And Dick was a married man at the time. Without missing a beat, Dick says, oh, wow, man, you could keep the negatives, but could you send me some prints? My wife really gets off on that.
that's funny.
7 o'clock at KOL.
That's funny.
Yeah. Anyway, so I get, Pat O'Day calls me up. He wants me to meet him at 96K. Wants to talk about being program director. And I said, let me get this straight. I said, I know you. You've got, you're here and Dick Curtis is here. Two of the best program directors I ever worked with. Winners of the Program Director of the Year Awards. And you want me to be program director when everything I know, I learned from the two of you. And the two of you are here. I think what you're looking for is someone to sit in that chair. And if the ratings are bad, you got someone to blame. And if the ratings are good, you give the credit to the sales department.
No,
nuke me before I ask for a raise.
No, Burl, that's why they hire consultants.
Yeah.
Those are the
guys.
Yeah.
Those are the guys.
Yeah. I think it was a consultant who told our PD, Robin Mitchell, that during the ratings they should only have 8 oldies that they play in rotation.
Is that right?
If I ever hear Puff the Magic Dragon one more time.
Where's the research there?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, but, you know, listen, Pat O'Day, I don't know if he's a brilliant program director. I don't think he is. I think he's a funny, clever guy, and I've always liked the guy. But, you know, he's the one who went with no recurrence on KYX. He thought that was the no recurrence.
That's going to make it work.
Yeah.
Only new stuff.
I've solved it.
He told me that at lunch at the, what was the old?
He was probably operating on the bottom of a bottle of Jack Daniels.
But he was. He was drinking. Hey, kid, you want to? And I said, no, I'm too young to drink, Pat. I think we've established that. But he's talking about it. He said, yeah, Matt, no recurrence. What do you think of that? And I'm thinking, well, I don't know much about programming at 16, you know? But, yeah, sounds good to me, Pat. Whatever you want to
do. Well, Pat will be the first to admit. Because I brought this up to him. We had a conversation one time, and he said, you know, Burl, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take Old Gold 77 KXA and make it bigger than KJR. I said, that's an AM station in an FM world.
Right.
And he goes, I was operating out of the bottom of a bottle of Jack Daniels at that time.
However, this little AM station playing oldies in Los Angeles is beating the hell out of KABC.
Oh!
Yes, beating the hell. Tough. I mean, little AM station, with no advertising, by the way, no billboards, no nothing, word of mouth, filling that void that K-Earth now doesn't fill.
That's right, because K-Earth only has 12 songs.
It's true.
I know. I listened to it for 12 minutes. I heard everything.
I love little success stories like that.
There you go. Burl, what's next?
Magic Matt Allen of the Demons of Decadence is live in the Light of Loud.
Now, see, I was going to lead you into that, but this intro is so long, I was going to give you enough time to hit. There are like 5 posts.
Really?
Yeah, this is just one of the first ones.
Boom, boom, boom. I wish you were playing Might As Well Be Walking on the Sun. I like that one.
Oh, yeah, it's a great tune.
Sounds like Northwest Rock and Roll, that one does.
See, now you can feel where it's coming.